career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Here's the thing.
If you smile enough, then everybody smiles.
Here's the thing.
If you work a little harder, you'll get by.
Here's the thing.
Or you can trust a man who wears a suit and tie.
It's such lies, 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 lies.
Here's the thing. If your parents work to earn it, then it's yours.
Here's the thing.
And if
we're back.
Getting by, then that's
coming
your
up on 10 minutes
thing.
Into hour two, Marcus Hirsch sitting across from me here at Monmouth Park. And if I'm not mistaken, Marcus, there was a year, maybe 3 years ago, maybe it was the hot weather version, where you were here, but we ended up doing it on the phone. You were off somewhere on the backstretch.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that sounds wild. I don't remember it at all. Maybe I was off on a bender.
How often have you come to do the coverage for this?
I helped out my man Jim Dunleavy 1 year.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think this is just my second year.
Really?
Yeah, I've only been on the Monmouth beat 2 years now.
And how do you like it? It's one of my favorite stops of the whole calendar.
I've been struggling, I got to tell you. I'm struggling to make sense of a lot of these races. There's a lot of trainers I don't know, a lot of horses coming from different places, kind of mishmash races in the condition claiming. These big field, like non-two turf routes are really difficult. But, you know, I mean, I've had some decent runs. They've got some, you know, they've had some pretty good two-year-olds here. Great navigator. He's a good horse. I saw him this morning.
Big time.
Saw him this morning come off the track, get a bath. He's headed to the Sapling here at Monmouth, going to bypass any more trips up to Saratoga. You know, Chad Brown's got a bunch of horses here. Pletcher's got a bunch of horses here. And the card on Saturdays is everything you could hope for, I think.
Agreed. Well, if Marcus is struggling at Monmouth in terms of the ROI and the pop percentage, you're making up for it at Colonial.
Colonial has been good to me. I picked a lot of winners this week, didn't have as many prices. The racing, they've struggled a little more for entries. The first week was robust, and when it's robust and you've got fields of well-intended horses, I just think it's easier to make sense of the form.
True.
Once you start hustling and scraping together entries to get races to go, that's when I start struggling a little more too, and when I think you tend to get a lot more chalk. But yeah, you just mentioning, we were talking before you came back on about the Colonial Cup, the feature on Monday. Monday's card is pretty solid. I'm working through Tuesdays. Tuesdays are, I've noticed, are having less, more lower-level horses than Mondays. The Monday cards have been pretty good, and the Colonial Cup's a pretty fabulous race for a Monday feature.
Well, between Parks and Colonial and Indiana, and even Presque Isle, who's now gotten into their stakes season, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I mean, you just cannot skip over the first part of the week.
And no wonder Saratoga's not running Mondays anymore. They just wouldn't be able to compete.
Well, you can't get Chris Griffin to come up and call.
Right.
This Haskell, and let's dive into what we're dealing with. And Marcus, you know, originally billed seemingly as, you know, a feature opportunity for Jack Christopher. And we go back to Jack Christopher's graded stakes success to start the year in the Pat Day Mile. He then even went from strength to strength with that just crushing performance in the Woody Stevens. And now comes the two-turn debut. Chad Brown has been really effusive, which is a little unusual for him to be as gushing about a horse as he's been about this one. Then here comes Taba thrown into the mix, and the Baffert factor that has dominated this race for the last couple of decades. And it's been billed as a two-horse race, but the more you look at it, there's some other intrigue, and I'm anxious for Marcus-style analysis.
Huh. Well, what do you think of Jack Christopher? Is he a superstar, or is it a little TBD, more so to you than to maybe the general narrative current?
When we were standing in the winner's circle at Churchill after the Pat Day Mile, and Chad evoked Ghost Zapper as a comparison. because he is not somebody that is going to put an albatross on one of his horses to that level.
Doesn't make any sense unless you think they can deliver.
So he is seeing things in the way this horse moves and in the way the horse trains and behaves that makes him think that this is a horse that will easily make the transition. And I tell you, if he rates and can settle and, you know, doesn't get caught up with any of the pressure that could come from either side of him early, then I mean, this is the acid test. I don't doubt him, but this will be the rubber meeting the road.
Yeah, I do think that in the long run he's going to turn out to be a miler. He's got so much natural speed, and then if you obviously individual gets primacy over pedigree, but on pedigree, he's out of a half hour's mare, a sprinter, and the second dam, if I remember right, is by Ogaijin, another pure sprinter. He's got, you go back five generations, you might find a couple route horses. And Munnings, while Munnings gets a very versatile sire, gets all kind of, he's got Bonnie South in this card. He's this big, tall, long striding, you know, mile and an eighth horse. But all that being said, I think that his speed just comes naturally to him. He doesn't look like an overly aggressive horse to me. I don't think rating is going to be an issue for him. I think he'll be tractable, and you probably, okay, I guess the race could be a mile and a 16th, but you couldn't ask for a much better circumstance to try the two turns where he's drawn on the outside, relatively short field. You said speed to the outside, maybe Benevengo has shown some speed, but it could be one of those situations where, I mean, we wonder what class is, but sometimes you see it in situations like this where the horse of lesser class just isn't able to be competitive really at any point in the race. I'm going to be surprised if Benevengo is lapped on Jack Christopher. Anyway, so he's either going to lead or sit right outside. sit right outside howling time. And the stretch here is, I looked it up the other day, 990 feet long. It's one of the shorter stretches at mid-major or major track in the country. So you come off the turn and you're basically home. Great place to stretch out a horse like this, and I think that's why Mr. Brown chose this spot. And I don't see why the horse is going to be very competitive. I mean, I do find Taba to be a fascinating animal in various levels, both because of what he did in his first two starts. Now, the form of the Santa Anita Derby may not match up to the 102 buyer all that much. Messier, Happy Jack. Messier, in his defense, he moved way too early into that hot pace in the Derby, which proved his undoing. But I think the jury is out on the quality of that field that he looped. That being said, off the three-quarter debut win to go to a mile and an eighth and run like that, he obviously has a ton of talent. I've enjoyed getting to see the horse in person the last two mornings. Yesterday, I just saw him in his stall. He's like a kid. He's got a lot of personality. He seems to want to have a good time, and he acts that way. He acted that way out on the track today. He does have a really appealing way of going. I mean, you can see why he fetched as much money as he did. And if you watch his breeze at that sale, he was like a rocket. Which is funny, because the story on him ever since is that he doesn't light it up in the morning. He needs company to work much at all, and they put him with horses that are not that strong, and you know, they stop riding them at the furlong pole and a gate work and let him go on so he can get separation. But I just have no idea what to expect from him. He could be amazing.
We will see. I don't know if you from yesterday, one of the things I said, I think to Tommy Lucci, there's a very strange phenomenon in here. You've got four horses that have the potential to all become millionaires tomorrow.
Wow.
Out of this race.
I don't have the potential to become a millionaire tomorrow.
Well, who knows? How about a...
Oh, it's true. Run it up, baby.
get on a heater.
I picked Cyberknife to win.
Whoa. Let's dive into that. And do we have an update, Tom? How's our man?
I think he's en route.
He's en route.
Yes.
I texted him last night. Al Gold was 50-50. It was hard to believe that Al, who grew up miles from here,
that's what I understand,
would miss his opportunity to stride triumphantly to the winner's circle with a Haskell winner. This would mean as much to him as, frankly, as the Kentucky Derby would have.
Sweet.
I'm thrilled to hear that Al is on his way.
Now, this is not a horse that I'm necessarily touting, because I do think the other two horses, Jack Christopher in particular, are especially formidable. But I do believe that Cyberknife is going to offer all the value in the race. I believe Brad Cox when he says there's more there. I think there is more there. This horse has been really slow to come around. If people remember early in his career, he was green, super green in every race, swerving in and out, almost going over the rail a couple times. Didn't act right in the morning, was always like acting coltish and didn't have focus. I think he's improved, but I think that you could see even in the Matt Wynn where he didn't want to leave that horse, who I think he's better than, maybe not. Howling Time is, I liked him last year. And we've got two really strict horses or courses so far in this race. Howling Time has been brilliant at Churchill and less so, well, brilliant's too strong a word. All his best races have been at Churchill. White Abario is 4-for-4 at Gulfstream, 0-for-3 anywhere else.
Yeah.
But I do think Cyberknife is going to get a trip more in his favor here. I think that he's better off sitting back and making one run from a stalking position, and I do think that's how it's going to unfold for him. And we'll see. We'll see if he's got a chance. If he's got another level to find. I mean, I just thought the price was right. I'm not taking a big stand against Jack Christopher.
You mentioned White Abario. What's the Ohio Derby with a chance to add to its key race potential after Classic Causeway's win?
Yeah, Classic Causeway is an interesting horse. I don't like White Abario here at all. I mean, if he wins or finishes first two, I lose. I mean, he did beat Charge It. Charge It had if people think back to the Florida Derby, he hit the side of the gate in that race and had a kind of crazy trip. And obviously he's a horse that likes to have things his own way, as he did in his last start, Tour de Force. But White of Barrio is fine. I just don't see, the potential for him getting to where I think he's going to need to be to finish in the top two in this race. I don't like him to finish third.
So Cyberknife, Jack Christopher, Taba.
Taba, yeah.
All right. Well, there's the read. Let's press forward and or backward, as it were, and talk about the United Nations, which historically one of the most important turf races in this country, and many a great turfer, a winner in the United Nations.
Yeah, three turn action, which is different than most. Important turf races we've seen so far this year. Gulfstream runs some three-turners. Gouffaut won their three-turn race, and I suppose if you wanted to make a case, and people are always trying to make cases for Gouffaut taking that next step that he's always seems to be on the verge of making. His Pan Am, you know, I saw there was a lot of buzz on him after that because he was just more assertive, got into the race sooner, finished it off with more verve than he has at times. And that was a three-turn race. Then he came back. I mean, I thought his Man of War was okay, fine. He beat Yabir. Highland Chief got the run of the race. But then, when you go back and look at the factional times, he finished really, really fast in the Manhattan. But again, he just is too far out of it to do any good. And I thought that, you know, if he's maturing and is going to be the horse that I thought he could be after his Hollywood Derby in 2020, which was an excellent, excellent run, he was going to have to be a little more versatile and be able to put himself in the race sooner instead of letting everything happen in front of him. And it's the same thing in the Manhattan where he just had too much left to do. I do think that Trubivan is a touch vulnerable here off the best race of his life, at least in terms of buyer speed figures. And some other pace in the race. I don't think he's going to get an easy lead like he did winning this race a year ago. And for that reason, and because he's had no luck so far this year, Adamo for Chad Brown was a horse I was touting in the United Nations. He's 3-1, co-second choice in the line. Could I hope for a touch more than that? Maybe not.
A good group in the UN. Let's back it up to the Molly Pitcher, and again, one of Monmouth's real standards for the fillies and mares.
Yes, I suppose it is. What are their other standards?
Haskell, the
Islin. Oh, for fillies and mares, you said though.
Well, you know, I do have to mention a race that had been, and you and I have discussed this in various guises, the slide down the scale of the Boiling Springs.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Was for years a terrific three-year-old Harbinger, you know, event, and sad to see it lose its grading, everyone seems to agree we've got too many graded stakes.
Well, some important people don't seem to agree. The people who determine how many graded stakes there are going to be. So.
Zing!
The Molly Pitcher, I thought, came up. Well, I mean, it's a $400,000 purse.
Yes.
They're not just throwing pennies out there.
No.
That's a real purse for this kind of race. Search results is probably going to be odds on, 6-5,
yeah.
Odds on.
Yeah.
She's going to be real short, and I was taken aback, literally taken aback. I took a step back at Mr. Brown's strong, strong disappointment the day after the Ogden Phipps. He really thought that horse was going to win that race, and he made no bones about suggesting the jockey had made a tactical error in going too hard too soon. And he thinks that she would have won if she'd been ridden a little more patiently. And you can't really argue with him. She ran a huge race. Can she come right back to that? I mean, maybe. She might be pretty damn good. I mean, her Kentucky Oaks was pretty damn good. I think she's got the foundation and the legitimacy to double up on that performance. And if she does, no one's going to be beating her in this race. I saw a touch of value underneath, Steve, with Penny Baker, who was very impressive both in France in all those races against not as bad an opposition as you might guess, especially that last race. And then ran to that form at Laurel in the Heavenly Cause, and then was a big disappointment. Sans Lasix in the Chicago. Don't know if that made a big difference. I mean, she wasn't getting Lasix in France, but that's the difference that I see. I mean, she did take a while to run back off that U.S. debut. I do think she's capable of a lot better than this. I mean, this solid field Army wife made a lot of progress last year. I don't know if she's going to make the same sort of forward move throughout this campaign. We shall see. If she does, she could put a little charge into search results. And I don't fancy Bonnie South today. I mean, you could say that the one-turn Phipps wasn't her thing, except she ran pretty damn well in it in 2021. I haven't seen the sort of development in her that I kind of expected. I thought last year she had a chance to take a step forward and be really at the top of the division. Didn't happen. I'm not seeing positive signs.
You know, you mentioned Penny Baker, and of course, you look at the breeding on this Godolphin product, a Medaglia d'Oro out of Macaroon, a daughter of Fast Cookie.
Yes.
And
there was tons of dirt. That's one reason I liked her a lot at Laurel first time out, going from the synthetics. And she's got some pedigree. I think she'll stay the mile and a 16th at this race course. She just needs to bounce back. If she bounces back, she's plenty good enough to run second.
I'm anxious to talk to Mike Stidham. Next time we talk to Mike, I'm going to be curious about Godolphin. You know, a lot of times we see them sent here, you know, for various reasons. There aren't too many that they've sent here because they need dirt specifically. So that part of her career is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she was good on the all-weather, but there's a limit to what you can accomplish overseas in that kind of race.
Exactly. And, I'm just looking at APR, at American Produce Records, and I do see that the sister, there's a Bernardini brother, actually, Last Cookie, and there are workouts. We're going to have to find out.
Where's he working?
At Ellis.
Huh, Brad Cox.
You would think, potentially, and we're going to find out. Just had a 5/8 move from the gate, and it's Last Cookie, so I'm guessing the Fast Cookie. Did you read that Fast Cookie died? She was one of my absolute favorites when Kieran
did had. Not read that.
Yeah, I'm gonna assume that's, I mean, you don't name it Last Cookie unless they took her out of service as a broodmare, which would be nice. The broodmares, it seems like they just breed them to death, which makes me crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's not an easy task being a mother. Just ask my mother.
Hey now, moving backwards, another famous historic race, the Matchmaker. Mm-hmm. And Winstar attached themselves to it in recent years and provide the top three finishers with seasons. For these fillies and mares.
Tom's D'Etat, one of my favorite horses of recent vintage, is one of the lucky stallions this year.
Who are the three?
Improbable is the other, another Ooh. One, and Global Campaign.
That's three nice. That's three nice stallions.
I like a horse in this race. Do you?
Let me go back to my.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about this line. I'm not liking the line here.
What? I think Lady Rockstar in here that from Lady Rockstar always intrigues me. Anything from Brendan Walsh.
Well, he's cooled down quite a bit absolutely unbelievable winter and spring work.
True,
it was sensational. I mean, you can't go that hard all year, even with an expanding stable like Brendan's. And it'll come. Everything's going to come back around again. We'll see if this filly is quite good enough on the cutback. But Chad has three. If you had to rank them, how would you rank them? Fluffy Socks, Flighty Lady, La Mista.
I've been a Fluffy Sox fan, and
Okay.
I was. I mean, she has. She's kind of, I don't know if she's plateaued, needs to take another step forward, but
she's not bad. Her second to Bleecker Street looks pretty good in retrospect.
Absolutely.
She made the first move. She had Bleecker Street following her. So that was a good race. You can throw out her last race. It was a bad trip. But I like La Mista, who had a terrible... I didn't like... She had no chance in the Eatontown. And she had no chance in the Bogey, where she gave up a very nice, cozy, just behind the pace position early in the race and got too far back and was on the inside on a course that over time has seemed more and more outside biased. Her second to Harvey's Little Goyle, way back in her North American debut, says she is plenty good enough. And her third in the Beverly D, a paceless Beverly D, was not bad at all. She might not want to go quite that far. She has a lot of... her baseline performance level is quite obscured at this point. I don't know that she'll be 5-1, but if she's anywhere close to it, I will be betting her.
What are we getting on Lady Rockstar?
You are getting... I don't know. I just think Flighty Lady is going to be more than 7-2. Fluffy Sox, I think, is going to be more than 5-2. You might be getting about the morning line on Lady Rockstar. 3-1, 7-2.
What about Vigilante's Way? What about Sugar Bear?
Well, I mean, apparently every horse in this race is going to be 7-2. I was a big Vigilante's Way supporter last year. I thought she was better than her final time figures. She had no chance last time. An absolutely ridiculously slow pace set by Stolen Holiday in Eatontown, which is just tossed that. And I didn't. She got a bad trip in the Miss Liberty too. She's every bit possible to win this race. Every bit. I just don't. I think best race to best race on a level playing field, I'll take La Mista over Vigilante's Way.
The Monmouth Cup and the Grade 3. These are the...
Return of Informative.
The Informative dances the dances. I think, I would hope that people at this point do not doubt Uriah St. Louis wherever he shows up.
Well, he's a 5-time winner this year. So, I mean, if you doubted him 89 times, you were right.
He has been able, though, to...
I give this horse a chance. This race could end up having a really strong pace.
Yes.
And it happened. I mean, I don't... When a horse runs, like, the race of his life out of nowhere, at the only start at a venue, maybe it's mere coincidence. Maybe he has a special affinity for this racetrack. And at the price he's going to be, I think he's usable.
There's some interesting things happening in this race. Let's kick outside to Highly Motivated, and this is, if ever there was a current poster horse for the way in which Chad Brown and Seth Klarman work together, here it is. Here's a horse that after the Derby had to pull up and needed time, and look at the way he's brought back, just gingerly and not to say path of least resistance, because he didn't win his comeback race.
Don't ask him to do too much too soon,
exactly,
or you won't have anything left.
Exactly. And they do this, and I've discussed this over the years with Chad, because he's got the luxury, and certainly with his roster of owners, he's got the luxury of owners that understand the best, their long-term best interests, that aren't dictating, we have to get to this race. Chad lets the horse tell them, and
presumably you hire a trainer to train the horse.
Well, that's the in principle, yes.
Uh-huh.
In principle.
Clearly you are correct that it does not often work that way. Anyway, I'm not sold on Highly Motivated taking an... I mean, he's obviously a plausible winner. Stage Raider, who is stablemate, who he nipped last time, he's a decent horse. Listed stakes level, maybe Grade 3 on a best day. And, he's stepping him up one level at a time, distance-wise, 7/8, one turn mile. and now out to a mile and an eighth, where he ran essential quality to a neck in the Bluegrass, albeit with help from a very tepid tempo. But I'm not sure which one of the two Browns is better suited to this spot, because I think Pipeline has got a good chance, too. I don't like this race very much at all, and I'm not that interested in getting involved paramutually.
Well, that's a crafty answer, but who'd you pick? Who'd you put on top?
I don't know. That was a long time ago, Steve. That was yesterday morning.
Hold on. I think I have it here.
It somewhere.
All right. I got it, too. I'm good this way.
I think I picked Pipeline.
You did pick Pipeline. You went Pipeline, highly motivated, Top Gun Tommy.
Wait, that's not me.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
I included Uriah St. Louis. I know that.
Oh, look at you. No, you're Hermes. You're in the
That's
Hermes.
Right. I'm Hermes.
That was Kenny Peck, we've run our streak of coming to Monmouth and not getting a chance to talk to Kenny. We've run it to, I think, maybe 8 years now. It's one of the great streaks in racing.
He's
unbelievable. I could book Kenny. I could try to book him 3 weeks ahead of time, and I never can get Kenny. It's
well, I don't think I've seen the man in 15 years. So.
It's too funny.
Okay, so
you picked Informative.
I did. I went for the price, hoping for a fast pace and a fall apart race. I mean, I didn't trust either of the short prices enough.
How about that?
There you go,
Marcus. This is always an interesting conversation.
Same. I like talking to myself, too.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, from the Daily Racing Form. And we've got a colleague. When was the last time you saw Ron Gierkink? Have you ever seen Ron Gierkink?
Was he at the Daily Racing Form Digital Summit of like 6 years ago? I don't know that I've ever met Ron in person.
But Ron's been at the paper as long as...
longer.
Than you, right?
And I mean, longer.
Forever.
Yeah, I mean, forever and a day, because I've been here forever.
Too funny. I love it. Marcus, enjoy.
So far, so good.
Yeah? Can I help you with any, since it's only your second time? Can we give you any dining pushes or anything you need?
Guess where I'm staying.
Ooh.
What town I'm staying in. I got an Asbury Park.
Well, I'm staying in Asbury.
Other direction. How about Rahway?
Rahway? Rahway? By the state prison?
Well, very near. Let's just say that there's something on my ankle right now.
Too funny.
Nope, Rahway.
How'd you end up in Rahway?
Well, I booked late, and things around here are quite pricey. I always like to save the company a dime.
You're
Shout
so
out to companies. So, yeah, I have an Airbnb. You know how much it costs per night? $75.
Holy cow!
And it has a roof.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
the closest we've come to utilizing a B&B, the Airbnb concept. Sonder, you familiar with Sonder?
I've stayed in Sonders before. They're nice.
In Philly, we stayed in Sonder in Philly, and twice now, and it's been fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. I don't care for hotels that much, and I always Airbnb it. This was a bit out of and my first instinct was to just take the train down until I saw the limited schedule.
Yeah,
of Monmouth. And I'm glad I didn't. But, yeah, getting to know Rahway a little bit. The Rahway River, there's a nice riverside park. Merck is there. There's my Rahway report. And the prison. Everyone knows the prison.
Well, there's two state organizations that start with R in Jersey, Rutgers and Rahway.
Okay, yeah. Hopefully not too closely affiliated.
Too funny. Marcus, thank you so much, as always.
My pleasure. It's great to see you in person.
A treat. And because did I ever see you at Derby?
I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
I think you walked by. There was one of those.
Did we snub one another? Did we mutually snub?
No.
Oh, as a warm greeting.
You enjoyed, and a lot of people this year.
I did. I set up outside.
The outside setup has become, people have warmed up to it.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, very much.
I know. I mean, when I go to the races, I want to see the races.
Yeah.
I don't want to be stuck inside, and I'm sitting right there working, watching the races, you know, at the eighth pole. It was beautiful.
I was out there a couple times. I did a half hour with on Sirius, actually, with their broadcast, and I will utilize it more, I think, next year. My race day, because I, you know, my gig is the best in all of media, Monday through Friday. So when it comes to the big Saturday, I'm pretty much a paddock to track apron, paddock to track apron.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of glad handing, kind of a glad handing dandy, truth be told.
Someone needs to make a documentary, Steve.
Stop, please. DRF Hirsch, everybody. And if you wanted to put a C in there, give that to Welsh, because Welsh has got the crazy spelling with a C. Marcus has the spelling without the C.
Keep it simple.
DRF, H-E-R-S-H. Marcus, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
We're going to reach out. We're going to get James Scully in here quick, because James has got an 11 o'clock drop dead time. So let's get Scully in, and then Ron Gierking. Ron, I know you're listening, because I hear from Ron all the time. And we understand. I missed it, but Tom Luch did not. Tom mentioned that Ron, we've talked before about Ron's family and Ron himself, they breed and they own standard breds and more. And I guess Ron had a winner the other day at Woodbine. So we'll hear from that. And of course, the standard bred side of things as well, the Gear King family, big time in Canada, La Canada. But I want to make sure we get Scully's opinions in here before we run afoul of his schedule. And then hour three, Nick Tamaro, who's coming here, Hammer, and Dave Grenning. All right? And we'll get Dave. Dave will lay out the chronology of the situation yesterday, the unfortunate and challenging circumstance whenever you have to deal with races coming off the grass at the last minute. And it just throws the multi-race. I mean, there were literally, two layers of frustration and anger and consternation from players. The decision, then the circumstance of changing to make it an all. In fact, Tom Lucio and I were talking earlier. He had a buddy that would have had the pick five twice as laid out. And so it depresses the prices. That'll get under the people hot under the collar. So we'll let Dave talk. I'm sure he had discussions with Braulio Baeza, and we certainly respect the challenges that the stewards there or anywhere else deal with, but there's just so much everybody can just throw up your hands, at a certain point. And as I said at the top of the show, too, what's the alternative? You go ahead and take races off the turf in anticipation of potential wet weather, and where does that leave you? Now, you got horses that are going to scratch out of the off-the-turf race, and so now you've got trainers and owners that are frustrated, and then if the rain doesn't come, you're dealing with the situation of confronting the fact that it wasn't necessary to take them off. So this is always a no-win from almost every direction. James Scully, though, that's a must-win and frequently win scenario. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Glad to be on with you. It's a good weekend at Monmouth Park with the Haskell.
Big time, and it's going to be just gorgeous. there's also, of course, so many things to choose from. What's your Del Mar? I can't remember the last time we talked about this. I'm sure it was last summer or before. How much action does Del Mar get from you?
I've looked at today's card. I've started going over tomorrow's card. I mean, I'm gonna pick some spots. I'm looking. I keep an eye on these dirt sprints early in the meet. Even the dirt routes. Just to see. I think horses that have positional speed can have an edge in those races early in the meet, and good form and positional speed. I always look for that early in the meet at Del Mar in dirt sprints.
There you go. So there's an angle. Where do you want to start for the coverage?
I'll start at Monmouth. I'll do the All Stakes pick four, hit a few spots at Saratoga, and then give a last-second pick.
Very good. Let's go.
All right. In the first stake race, the matchmaker for Phillies and Mares on the turf. A lot of familiar faces here in this Philly and Mare turf division. Three Chad Brown runners, Vigilante's Way. But I am intrigued by Lady Rockstar. I think that she has done everything right so far. And I like the fact that in her two starts, one, she sat, pretty well back in the field. Last time she was able to race a little bit closer in that allowance at Belmont. She's going to have to keep progressing, but she does. I mean, she's going to have to, step up against tougher rivals. But she does look like a progressing type to me for Brendan Walsh. We'll see what her odds are. Those Chad Brown runners are going to take some money, I think. And I like Lady Rockstar and the matchmaker.
Just minutes ago with Marcus Hirsch, Marcus asked me my thought, and my first pass, Lady Rockstar was where I gravitated.
Yeah, absolutely. In going to the second race in All-Star Pick 4, the Molly Pitcher, race number 10, I'm search results last time really ran a commendable effort doing on the front end with Latruska. But I do have some concerns with her. She's only won one of her last four starts that came on a wet track. And, at extremely short odds, I'm going to try to beat her in here with Army Wife. And the thing I like about number four, Army Wife, I just think she's rounding in the top form for Mike Maker, and it's her third start off the layoff. That was, last year in her third start off the layoff, Army Wife won the Black Eyed Susan by open length at Pimlico. And I just thought she really carried her form forward in her next couple starts. I thought that was a really good third in Alabama, even when she got beat two lengths by Malathat. And then, she only made two more starts. I liked her effort last time. She got Lasix back last time in that Lady Jacqueline Stakes. I thought she beat a pretty decent rival, the runner-up. And she's 3-for-3 on Lasix. And with these outside horses in this race, there's actually number 5 and number 6, Best Dream and Shalimar Gardens. There's some pace in this race. So I do think Army Wife's going to get the right setup or get a favorable setup. And I'm going to give her an edge at 7-2 on the morning line.
Very good. I do want to note the one horse that hasn't come up talking about this race, Leader of the Band, who came in here last year off the Delaware Oaks try and won at 10-1, won the Monmouth Oaks, and subsequently come back and won that Lady Secret, and she's won on both a wet track and not a wet track. I love horses. That come back here, and I think you've got to respect Leader of the Band in this spot too.
Yeah, you'll get a good price on her 6-1 on the morning line in there. Turning to the United Nations, I thought this year's race, I just think it's dynamite. They got a big field. They got 10 horses in here, and they have the top three finishers from the Manhattan right back in here. Some of these horses are going to be in the Breeders' Cup turf. If they remain healthy. I like number 1 at Homo. I think this is his time right here. I thought that in the fairgrounds, his first race off the layoff, he was left with too much to do in that day, and really ran okay to be, was extremely wide. The Turf Classic, he was too far back in the stretch and just gutted out a third place effort. And then in that Manhattan, this Tribuven stole it. I thought that was bad luck last time for Adhamo. I think he's going to get a I think drawing the rail is going to enable him to save some ground on Saturday with Flavie and Pratt. I'm giving him the edge in the UN.
Very good.
And then my pick in the Haskell, Steve, is Taiba. And, you know, one thing I always say, the thing with the preps up to the Derby this year, I mean, the two fastest races were the Santa Anita, by points, by several points, were the Santa Anita Derby and the Wood Memorial. The Wood Memorial, both the top two finishers were separated from ahead. They both got 111 Bristnet speed ratings, and they came back and they won the Preakness and Belmont Stakes. Taiba not only got a 111 race, a number in that race, but I thought it was a remarkable effort in a second start considering the trip that Messier got. I thought that horse was razor sharp coming in the Santa Anita Derby, and when Forbidden Kingdom quit on the far turn, he had everything his own way and looked like a winner at the top of the stretch. Taiba, to me, drawing inside in post two, is going to put him on the lead. I think he has more speed than Cyberknife to his inside. He has more quickness than Howling Tide. The only horse that would beat him to the lead, in my mind, is Jack Christopher. And drawing inside of Jack Christopher, I think, puts him on the front. He's going to look to go wire to wire, and I'm going to give him the edge in the Haskell.
All right. There we go. So for the numerically, the straight all-stakes pick four, 4-4-4-2, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. 4-4-4-2.
No. 4-4-1-2.
4-4-1.
Adhamo's the one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're right. There we go. 4-4-1-2. Thank you.
All right. And then turning to Saratoga, I'll just give my thoughts real quick on the Coaching Cup American Oaks. You know, it's fascinating. It's round two of Secret Oath and Nest. I think, you know, it's always exciting to get these matchups. And while it's only five horses, I think that the fact that you get this society in there really, you know, she's going to play a role in how this race sets up. She's going to go to the lead. And I don't think society is fast enough yet or, you know, experienced enough yet to beat those horses, I don't think she's necessarily just going to fold her tent when Ness comes after her on the far turn. And if those two rivals, you know, they could, I just think that her presence benefits Secret Oath. I think that's going to give Secret Oath the ability to, you know, make her run on the far turn while those two are I think I'm projecting them to be going at it, Society and Ness. And I think Secret Oath's going to get the right setup, and I like her chances.
Excellent. All right.
In race number nine, I love these mile-and-an-eighth allowance races at Saratoga where I think horses are vulnerable at a short price at the distance. I think Stage Raider, the even money favorite, is a one-turn specialist. His lone two-turn effort at Keeneland was a mile-and-a-16th race where he ran second to Bus Moon, who has come back and gotten drilled in his next two starts at Churchill, and he's going to be running in claiming races soon. That was a terrible effort, I thought, at Keeneland on April 13th. I think that one of the horses in here that's going to relish the trip is number two, the Reds. And I think that he has come back this year, and his form is okay. His first race in a mile and an eighth, his lone two-turn race this year, he ran into Vindictive, who came right back in his next start, was the even money favorite in the Pimlico Special and ran ahead second. His next race at Belmont, he got beat two lengths by Southern District, who has won two allowances in a row for Chad Brown by open lengths. He came back and rolled in his next start at Churchill. And then last time, that race was too short for him at that one-turn mile distance. It basically just provided, like, you know, more fitness for him. But I think at the two-turn trip, at the mile-and-eighth trip, he's also a horse that isn't just one-run plotter. He can sit mid-pack. I think he's going to relish the trip, and I think he's going to come with a big run and prove best in race number nine. Number two, the Reds.
Excellent. And of course, last year as a three-year-old, made a bit of a cameo in some of the three-year-old features. And I suppose you looked at the Caress?
I looked at the Caress, and I like number eight, Super Sensational. I love their last effort on turf. I like these horses that when they switch surfaces, she's a four-year-old filly, and they show, like, that they run well, they like it. they still can offer value in their upcoming starts. And I think that's the situation here. 8-1 on the morning line. I mean, I'm not sure she'll be that high with Dylan Davis, but I think she's going to carry that form forward. Obviously, cutting back to 5.5 furlongs is, you know, a little bit of a concern, but she has some tactical foot. And I like I said, I think she's going to be good on the grass this year at age 4 for Mark Cassie.
Well, certainly it would be great for Mrs. Webbert to win in town for the meet, of course. And we're a fan. Super sensational in the Caress. Part of the cross country, which we'll go over with Nick Tamaro in a couple of minutes.
All right, and I got my last second Friday pick for you guys. The first race at Del Mar, the opener at Del Mar tonight. Number 10, Maxim Moment, 5-1 on the morning line. His last two are very sharp. He's in sharp current form. He's going to be in position at the top of the stretch. I think he's going to come out running in that opener. So I'm going with number 10, Maxim Moment, in the opener in Del Mar.
Very good. James Scully, outstanding. James_Scully, 111. And the Twin Spires team, Brisnet team, getting you into the weekend between James and Scott Shapiro. James, good luck. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks to you.
James Scully, folks. Ron Gierkink, we're going to get to Ron here, and before Nick Tamaro joins us, and we're predictably getting into some deep water timing wise. So let's get Ron Gierkink in, because we have got to look at both the Connaught Cup, the Saturday feature, which is part of the cross country, and then looking over at Sunday, the Woodbine Oaks. And speaking of the Woodbine Oaks and the Plate Trial and terrific card on Sunday, Ron's analysis is up and all the details are up at DRF. But I did make the Woodbine Oaks the beat BIC play. And so it's interesting because there's a lot of invaders that are intriguing in there. I did not have, when I had to make the decision and send it in to Holly Short and Michelle Ravencraft, I did not have a morning line, and I was sort of hopeful that Salabia, one of the last Shadwell North American runners, not sure how many more are going to continue in on the late Jake Hamdan's colors and under the Shadwell banner. But I thought there was a chance that, you know, you might get third choice, 9-2. Doesn't look like that happened, though. And, in fact, here, let me switch to the, while we wait for Ron, let me switch over, because Moira, who makes plenty of sense from Kevin Attard and X-Men Racing, and Sal Kuhnman's involved as well. Moira, 5-2 favorite, and it turned out that Salabia ends up as the second choice at 3-1. So not exactly getting a price, but her two, and she's a maiden, I should mention. She hasn't won, but she's run very well in her two starts at Belmont in May and June. I certainly understand them coming up here. And, this is was the $1.6 million Keeneland Yearling purchase going back to 20. And so, she was, the expectations were high. She showed speed in that try at Belmont and in her debut going a mile and 16th in May. She kind of hit the front a little early, kind of a rare miscue in terms of, moving from Flavian Pratt. And what is certainly true from that group, that debut produced Contemporary Art, who was second and won next out, and Kanisi, that won wire to wire at Saratoga. So she obviously ran into some real horses. She has to get over the synthetic, but there doesn't feel like there's any reason that she wouldn't. So, Salavia for me. And Ron's going to join us in about a minute, and we'll get all of his thoughts on the rest of the card. And here he is now. Play trial, of course, and there's also the Dan Smartley on that Sunday card. Ron, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm terrific, and I don't know if you were listening earlier with Marcus. We were kind of speculating. How long have you been at the DRF?
1988. I started in the office at the near the old Greenwood Racetrack. We had an office there on Carla Avenue, and then I started working out of Woodbine in like 1994. So I think there's a few guys who have beat me, like Mike Welsh and Hammersley, I think. But I'm one of the longest serving employees. So
unbelievable, 34 years. Well, and also it was brought to everybody's attention here in the publicity office at Monmouth. You won a race the other day at Woodbine?
Yeah, I mean, last month I won a race with Nash Trick, and actually Nash Trick is back out this afternoon in an allowance on the Tapita. His last win was on the turf. So, I've got two horses, and the other one should be running next Saturday, a horse called Anna Cleaves, running in a starter a handicap. So, that's my two-horse stable.
Outstanding. And, I think most of our conversations have been more related to the family's standardbred success.
Yeah, well, we've never been involved in standardbreds, just thoroughbreds. My late father had a really good mare. He bred horses for years. He had a good mare called Moonlit Beauty. She won a six stakes.
Oh, sure.
Made about $900,000. And now I have her as a brood mare. So that's my lone brood mare. And she's part of the family, really.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I thought the standardbred side too, but all right.
Just thoroughbreds.
All right. Well, that's nice. I just pulled up Nash Trick actually right here, and. What's the prospects? What are the thoughts about this spot?
Well, you're doing well. We're a little worried about the heat. It's a hot day here like everywhere else, and we'll see. You know, it's a pretty good spot. It's a good distance for him, and I think he was a little cramped on the inner turf last time. I think the jockey thought that maybe he's best off on the main turf and then maybe secondary on the Tapita. So, there's a nice main turf race back in 3 weeks if this doesn't pan out. So we'll see. But,
all right.
He's a nice, classy horse.
Get lucky. Be watching for the results. Ron, let's touch on this weekend and the meet moving along readily now, and especially when Woodbine Oak shows up and play trial. We got the Connaught Cup tomorrow. Start with tomorrow's Connaught, which is part of, as it happens, part of the cross-country pick five.
Yeah, got a grade 2 7/8 on the main turf, and we are in lane one, so there's lots of room out there, but we're going to need it because the Connaught's a 14-horse field. With Cheryl Spite, the grade one winner, the lukewarm 3-1 favorite, drawn in post 14. So he's going to have to work out a trip and not go too wide, but I suspect this is an early prep for him for the Woodbine Mile in September. And he's coming off a third in the Salvatore Mile at Monmouth on the dirt, which was sort of an experiment trying him on the dirt. Ran okay, and I mean, the start before that, he was fourth on the grade one on the Churchill turf course, which a lot of horses never really handled that well. So that was his first start after winning the Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland. So he's certainly the deserving favorite, but you can go a lot of different ways in this race. You know, we have a lot of classy older horses in this race, like White Flag and Olympic Runner, and Silent Poet has been the best turf sprinter at Woodbine for about 3-4 years. He's getting up there, though. He's seven. And a couple of Saratoga Shippers, Chewing Gum for Bill Mott. He's been idle since he won the Grade 2 Joe Fernandez at Santa Anita January 1st. That race hasn't produced a next out winner, so I don't know how good that race was, but that was 6.5, not going down the hill, but on the other turf course there. So he's, you know, he looks like he's in with a shot. And nice to see Declan Carroll was starting to win here for Cassie recently. And
yeah,
he's got the mount on that chewing gum. Yeah. And the other shipper is a George Weaver trainee turning events, who's coming off the second level allowance win going long at Monmouth. So, and then old March to the Arch in post one. He's been off since January. I'm not sure if he's going to need one or what. And he's 7 years old now, so he's been working right along, though. So, interesting race.
Who'd you end up picking in here?
I landed on Philo Di Arania. He's a Brazilian import for Cassie, who his first start here in the spring of last year was dynamite. I mean, he won a tough allowance, visually impressive. And then the next couple races, he went to the shelf again for a while after that. His next couple starts in grade one and grade two company on the turf earlier this year weren't that good, but then he added Lasix last time for a third level allowance here, and he romped on the front end by six lengths with a 102 buyer. He's coming back in 3 weeks. I'm a little worried about that, but he could be a different horse on Lasix. He's a powerful chestnut. So that's who I like there. And don't forget, interesting that Surly Furious shows up from Presque Isle. He just broke the 6-furlong track record at Presque Isle and at Tapita there. Never been on the turf, not much turf breeding, but he's a real wild card in the race, I think.
Good boy, good, deep, tough group. And when you fold in everything else on that cross-country pick five, the three races here at Monmouth and the Caress, the turf sprint at Saratoga, going to be a very challenging ticket-building exercise in the cross-country. Nick Tamaro will walk us through it next. Ron, let's jump to Sunday and the big plate trial day, Woodbine Oaks Day card, and there's lots of intrigue here. Start with the Oaks, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, you know, Moira is a deserving favorite. She's only lost once, and that was to the champion two-year-old filly from last year in the Mazarine Stakes. She only had the one prep this year of the going 7/8 in the Fury Stakes on June 11th, but it was a good one. I mean, she rallied four wide to win. She barely held off Pioneer's Edge. She got into some trouble that day, but Hernandez let her gallop out really strong. That was the intent, in case they weren't going to run her back in 3 weeks in the Saline. And it was a really good prep, and she's had two really solid works since then, three quarters in 1/12, and a nice work last weekend in a minute and change where she finished really strong. So I personally think she's going to be tough to beat. And Kevin Attard's really pointed her for this race, and he won the Oaks last year with Money for Roe. I kind of prefer her over the shipper that you like. You know, she's a real question mark, right, on the Tapita. Chad, for what it's worth, Chad Brown at Woodbine Lifetime, 14% with 86 starters, around a dollar ROI. So not the greatest ROI. And Kimura on the horse, Kimura takes a lot of money here. He's a leading rider here. So yeah, she's going to certainly take her share of action. I guess the other alternative is Pioneer's Edge. She came back. She was flat in the Saline last time, her first start going long, but she's adding Lasix now, and she had a really good work the other day where she outworked a horse called Dridal. So I think she's drawn outside. I think she could run a lot better than she did in the Saline. So those look like the obvious horses in the race.
Stick with the three-year-olds. Talk about the plate trial.
Yeah, I mean, the plate trial, the Minkster is going to try and stay unbeaten in the race. He won a Coronation Futurity last year over 9 furlongs, and then he won his 7-furlong season opener in the Queenston Stakes over Rondeur, and Rondeur came back in the Marine and won easily with a 96 buyer. So I think the Minkster wasn't really cranked up for his comeback, according to trainer Danny Vella, and he's worked super since the race. So he is the deserving favorite, and let's see. The real interesting horse in the race is the Todd Blanchard shipper for Chiefswood, causing mayhem. He's coming off a maiden win at Belmont with an 84 buyer in the mud. I know he's got quite a good synthetic pedigree. Into Mistress 16%, and he's after a synthetic stakes winner that Chiefswood campaigned. So he kind of looks like an up-and-comer, and it'll be interesting. He gets Kimura, too. It'll be interesting to see how he handles a synthetic, but maybe he'll need one over the track to set him up for the Queen's Plate if that's the way they want to go with him. I think a horse who's got a shot at a bit of a price is Dancing in Denial. He was second in the Coronation last year and coming off a third against older horses on the turf in Allowance Company. I think he's going to like the mile and eighth, and he's been working right along, so I like him a bit too.
Ron, that's a Samson homebred. How many Samsons are left?
Well, I guess all the younger horses were sold off, but the three-year-olds, this is the last crop that they still have are three-year-olds.
Wow.
So this is kind of their last kick at the can to try and win a Queen's Plate, and this is their best shot. And this horse is from a family of Dance Through the Dawn and Dance Smartly, so great family, and a son of Pioneer of the Nile.
Well, certainly, boy, it's going to be very difficult when they're gone, when we see the last starter ever for Samson. Is that going to be passed on to anybody?
Yeah, maybe I should try and
acquire the silks.
A souvenir. Yeah, it's a good idea. It is beautiful colors. I mean,
yes,
they really are historic. What a historic operation, and it'd be nice to see them go on to the plate with one more starter for Gale Cox. That would be ideal.
That'd be cool. All right, how about the Dance Smartly?
I mean, Dance Smartly, what a terrific race this is. I mean, out of the blue, Bill Mott supplements Wakanaka off a second in the Just a Game to a Regal Glory, and of course, she beat In Italian that day, and as you know, In Italian came back to win the Diana the other day. I mean, wow, what a horse for this race. The local top gun is Lady Spite Spear. She's never lost over this course, and of course she dead-heated for the win last time in the Grade 2 Nassau and gave Roger Atfield his 2,000th win. And, of course, and a really interesting horse is Favre Rover. A European import, first time for Cassie. She was third in the English 1,000 guineas last year to Mother Earth and Saffron Beach. And she's been working lights out here and gets Lasix. Patrick Cousins is going to ride. And interesting, she hasn't run since she finished third in a Group 3 in Bahrain to Lord Glitters. Or she was fourth to Lord Glitters. So she's got a lot of talent. Like I said, her works here have been spectacular, and she could be a little overlooked. I mean, I guess she's 7-2 on the line, but Wakanaka, I think, is the deserving favorite with Rafael Hernandez named. Interesting race, though.
Very much. Let's also talk about the early stake is the Hendry, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Hendry, a Grade 3 sprint. I mean, we have a Boardroom running against Ari's Princess. They're kind of old rivals, and Ari's Princess was champion female sprinter in Canada 2 years ago. I think they're going to be closer in the odds than the morning line suggests. But Boardroom went to the turf last time and won the Grade 2 Royal North over Super Sensational. It was really a strong effort in her second start back. So those are the two obvious horses in that race. And, of course, Ari's Princess making her second start for Safi Joseph last year and last out in the Belade and beat Ontario Sire horses easily that day, and that was Safi's first win at Woodbine.
Oh,
so she'll be going to the lead. Yeah, she'll be going to the lead, and she was a supplement shipping in from Saratoga. She's been going back and forth from New York from Safi's.
There's also, I mean, the presence of Amalfi Coast intrigues me that she, you know, ends up now coming back as a 6-year-old.
Yeah, she went through the November sale for, I think, over $400,000 last year. Tracy Farmer bought her, and then sent her to Mark Cassie, and then her first race back in the Royal North wasn't that good, but she was champion female sprinter here last year, so she could, she could easily wake up. You know, she's getting a little older now, but she's a big, beautiful chestnut mare, and her jockey Justin Stein won 3 races yesterday, so that's a bonus. Yeah, she's a good horse.
Ron Gierkink, everybody, and a big weekend at Woodbine. And when you have Woodbine Oaks, typically whoever wins the Woodbine Oaks becomes a serious player for the plate. That has been a very productive avenue, and plate just several weeks away now. And Ron, I appreciate it. We'll look forward to plate day coverage.
Yeah, that's August 21st, 4 weeks away.
Outstanding. Ron Gierkink, everybody. Ron, good luck today, and we'll talk to you next month. Ron Gierkink, folks, and the action at Woodbine. Outstanding. And we may have, I didn't want to pick that Moira because I knew she was going to be the short, she was going to be the short priced favorite in the Oaks. I made her the alternative should Chad's filly not, not go for some reason. But just looking for, just looking for an alternate to, what's going to be a fairly, I should probably be, 7-5 probably, Moira, in there, in that Woodbine Oaks, $500,000 Woodbine Oaks. Let's take a break. 15 minutes in. We got a lot to do in the last 45. We're going to have Nick Tamaro and Hammer and Dave Grenick to close out what's been a brisk morning, not temperature-wise, but timing-wise. Back after this to Monmouth Park.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA unlocked